Before rock and roll, the guitar was a little-noticed instrument, barely loud enough for audiences to hear. Even early amplifiers were invented to fix the problem dulled the senses with scratchy feedback. Enter the tinkerers, obsessives, and technical wizards. If Bill Gates and Steve Jobs birthed the age of the personal computer, then Leo Fender and Les Paul helped usher in the age of rock and roll. In Ian Port's new book, The Birth of Loud, Leo Fender, Les Paul, and the Guitar Pioneering Rivalry That Shaped Rock and Roll, he recounts the quintessentially American entrepreneurial story of how Fender, a Southern California radio repairman, and Paul, one of America's most popular guitarists and relentless innovators, transformed what was once a background instrument into the power tool that altered the course of popular music. Again, the name of the book is The Birth of Loud, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Ian Port to the roundtable this morning. Ian, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's a delight to have you. This is an awful lot of fun, a very entertaining book. Give us a sense of when you said, this would be a neat story.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, anyone who knows about guitars or rock music will know that instruments like the Fender Stratocaster and the Gibson Les Paul are kind of the big rivals of the field. They're like the Coke and Pepsi or the Apple and Microsoft of electric guitars. And what I found out writing this book was that years before these two names were on rival guitars, these men, Les Paul and Leo Fender, were actually friends tinkering together in a Hollywood garage in the 1940s, trying to find a new sound for the electric guitar. And I thought that was just so compelling that there had to be a great story there.
What you tell us basically is that the guitar was a little known instrument at the time that they were playing around, and then they figured out how to make it a powerhouse.
That's exactly right. I mean, the guitar had been around for obviously a long time. Even the electric guitar had been around for more than a decade and a half at the point where this story starts, basically. But, you know, what you had was basically an amplified acoustic instrument. It wasn't an instrument that was designed to ring out and stand out over a brass section, over a horn section in a large room the way that the electric guitar was today. And, you know, these guys wanted to give musicians, in Leo Fender's case, because Leo Fender wasn't a musician himself, or in Les Paul's case, he wanted that sound for himself. He wanted a bright, clear, powerful electric guitar sound that would define his own music and help make him a star.
When it comes to these two individuals, and let us begin with Leo Fender, tell us a little bit about him, his background, and how he ultimately came to the world of guitars.
Sure. So Leo Fender was born in a barn in Orange County, California, back when Orange County was really middle of nowhere. He was a kind of a quiet kid, didn't have a lot necessarily going for him. Parents didn't have a lot of high expectations for him. But he was an incredible genius at working with radio electronics and repairing radios, fixing them. And by his sort of mid-30s, he was running a radio repair shop in the town of Fullerton. He started fixing musicians' amplifiers. Then he started building their amplifiers. His amplifiers got a really great reputation. Then he started building guitars. And that's how he got into this path, even though he was not a musician himself. Les Paul, on the other hand, was sort of born, it seems, almost to be a star. He was a professional guitar player before he was old enough to graduate from high school. He had just bopped around from one paid group to another and ended up in Los Angeles after World War II, where he ran into this teetotaling radio repairman named Leo Fender, who was completely different. You know, Les Paul was outgoing, charming, a bit egotistical. Leo Fender was quiet, sort of self-denying. But they both wanted the same thing, and a relationship formed there around this pursuit.
In that relationship, how much did it become? I mean, in the beginning, you talk about these guys tinkering around, and then it becomes a rivalry. So how does it become a rivalry and even, I mean, to some extent, a race against the clock?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, both of these guys, and these are sort of tinkerers that are around in this circle in Orange in Southern California, kind of know that there's some advance on the horizon for the electric guitar. They can figure out that somehow this thing has to get louder. It deserves a more prominent role in music than it has. And so by 1951, Leo Fender's kind of fledgling little company comes out with what we know as a solid body electric guitar. It's what we know now as the Fender Telecaster. Now, Leo knew that Les Paul was, by this point, a huge pop star with his wife, Mary Ford. He was on the charts. They were selling millions of records a year, traveling all around the country. Leo went to try to get Les Paul's endorsement for his new guitar, knowing, of course, that that would, you know, what drastically widen the market for it. And I don't want to give away too many details, but lo and behold, a guitar did come out, a solid body electric guitar, the next year with Les Paul's endorsement, but it wasn't a Fender. It was from Gibson, the largest and sort of most established American guitar company.
One of the interesting aspects of the story, and there are many, but one of the interesting aspects of the story is the want for the product, right? The demand for it.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think when the Fender Telecaster came out, people had no idea, you know, what this was. Competitors mocked it. They called it a toilet seat with strings. But almost from the moment it appeared, it began selling incredibly quickly. And even though other instrument companies didn't initially see the appeal, once they saw the sales figures and they saw musicians kind of picking up this new tool, they sort of raced after it and said, okay, well, we think this is crazy, but we're going to have to go try and compete with Fender too.
When you look at the competition and what was happening, and you do it beautifully in the book, but I'm hoping you can tell us this morning about the difference in sound, of what the differences were, of ultimately how these instruments were different.
Absolutely. So, you know, sort of befitting Leo Fender's character, the Fender guitars, especially the Telecaster, were sort of plain working man's guitars. They have a sort of a thin, bright, penetrating, kind of punchy sound. It allows you a lot of precision as a player because they have these kind of single coil pickups that mean that any move you make on the guitar, any note you hit, is rendered really sharply and really clearly out of the amplifier. So it's bright, it's a little thin, whereas the Gibson Les Paul has a much more sort of traditionally pleasing, kind of warmer tone. It's got a very thick body. It has a glued-in neck, which gives the guitar a nice sort of sustain. When you hit a note, it rings out for a long time. And it has these kind of warmer pickups that come out of jazz guitars. So it's really warmer, sort of softer in some ways, and just sort of all around a little bit more powerful, too. And that's why it ultimately became a hard rock guitar, the Les Paul.
The hard rock guitar of Les Paul, let us talk about that and ultimately what it means for rock and roll, of how it changes the playing field.
Yeah, so, you know, initially the Gibson Les Paul model was not a huge success. And it had been canceled and no longer in production. In the mid-60s, people like Eric Clapton and Keith Richards sort of rediscovered it and found that its dual-coil humbucking pickups could drive amplifiers into this kind of thick, beautiful distortion. You can hear that on some of Eric Clapton's early records with John Mayall and the Blues Breakers. You can hear that with the mid-60s Rolling Stones stuff. And this was really kind of a hallelujah or a eureka moment for the musicians, especially of London in the late 1960s, because suddenly they had so much more of this beautiful sort of molten distortion available. And so it was a sound you couldn't get from a Fender. And so that kind of laid the path for the Les Paul becoming this iconic hard rock guitar, which it remains today.
And then there is the other and the Fender. And what did that bring to the equation?
So, you know, Jimi Hendrix showed up in London in 1966 playing a Fender Stratocaster, which at that time was an incredibly kind of unfashionable guitar. People saw it as sort of a has-been and a relic of the kind of early 1960s or late 50s. But as anyone who's listened to Jimi Hendrix will know, he summoned this incredible lyrical quality out of it, this incredible eloquence that really, I think, would be hard to get out of a different guitar. And part of that was the fact that the Fender had a little bit less drive to it, a little bit less thickness, and it allowed Jimi Hendrix to play these kind of delicate passages, really beautiful passages, and that kind of reestablished the Fender Stratocaster as a kind of worthy rival for the Gibson Les Paul, even in kind of harder rock music like what Jimi Hendrix played.
What surprised you in this story? Because I'm struck even by the title of The Birth of Loud. I mean, that is definitely an aspect of this story. The volume.
Yeah, absolutely. The volume is interesting. You know, I would say the most surprising thing to me is that I kind of grew up with the received wisdom that rock and roll was kind of like a big bang, you know, that all of a sudden the lights went on and rock and roll was here and everything else sort of went away. And while there was kind of a moment like that in the 1950s, the mid-1950s, I didn't appreciate really how much early rock and roll built on the music that came before it, built on country western music, built on jazz, built on western swing, built on, you know, R&B, and how much it was almost like a gradual transition into rock and roll until, of course, there was that one moment when Bill Haley and Chuck Berry arrived, and suddenly it's rock and roll forever.
The name of the book is The Birth of Loud, Leo Fender, Les Paul, and the guitar pioneering rivalry that shaped rock and roll. The book is published by Scribner, and it's a great pleasure to have Ian Port on the program. Ian, thank you very much for spending time with us.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Be well. Thank you. Again, the name of the book, The Birth of Loud, Leo Fender, Les Paul, and the guitar pioneering rivalry that shaped rock and roll. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.